Welcome to Local Bitcoiners, a podcast about Bitcoin meetups. In this episode, Reed and Rev talk with Satsi and Armin from Boston BitDevs.
All right, Local Bitcoiners, Rev Hodel here, back with Reed. And on this episode, we have Satsi, Stacy, and Armin from the Boston BitDevs. And before we get talking to them, as usual, I am going to go into a little meetup adventure story. And this last meetup I went to was the Western Suburbs meetup in Elmhurst, Illinois, just outside of Chicago. And man, there was a great attendance. We were out on the patio, really good vibes. And you know who came to this meetup was Stacy from the Bitcoin Nova podcast. She's now kind of cooperating with Eric FJ over at the Conduit Market. And we were actually just, Reed and I were just on the, what do they call it, the Open Markets podcast, talking with Eric and Sync over there. And so Stacy and I followed up on that. It was so interesting. It's kind of how, you know, the podcasts can bring people together in real life when you get together and you've listened to the same things, and now you get to kind of go deeper on some of the stuff that you talked about beyond just what boosting was going on. And so Stacy and I spent a lot of time just jamming on what podcasts we had been listening to from each other since we last spoke, and sold a bunch of eggs. And I had some beef jerky from Barn Miner down there in Tampa, and that I got from him at Lake Satoshi. And someone, I was thinking it was going to take me a while to sell all this beef jerky, and somebody bought it all right there in Elmhurst. So another great example of, you know, the when there is an item that's good and it shows up at a Bitcoin meetup, there's Bitcoin to be earned. People want to buy good stuff with their Bitcoin, and especially at Bitcoin meetups. But yeah, that was a great meetup. Reed, how about you? How was your last meetup?
I think one of the first times someone described you in one of the Telegram groups that I was in was that it's like a Bitcoin marketplace just follows Rev around, like literally wherever he goes. And so we always get to hear the good stories. My last meetup was great. So I talked about last week, I talked about kind of last minute, had the idea of having a Bitcoin meetup hike. And so it was kind of, you know, we meet once a month. So this was kind of halfway in between. And I dropped it into our new group chat and got a couple people interested and ended up posting it to Meetup. And yeah, we had a pretty good turnout. Did the hike. We ended up going to, there's like a local, it's like a summit house. It's like on top of a mountain. And it's a historic building. It's like an old hotel. And it was really cool to hear about. It's a place I've been there a whole bunch of times. Like I've been going there ever since I was little, actually. But hearing, you know, going on the tour and getting to hear a lot of the history, it just is, it's a very resilient building. Like it survived all kinds of stuff. It was built in 1851. So it's like been through fires and blizzards and like all kinds of calamities and collapses and things like that. And it's, you know, it's still here. And so now it's being preserved as like a historic building, but that was really cool. So we got to do kind of like the hike up, and then we got to hang out at the top and get this tour, and then, you know, chat about Bitcoin, chat about all the stuff we all have going on. And people were real interested to hear more about the podcast and all the stuff that, that we've been doing over here. So yeah, it was definitely a good time. I think I told the story last time, but a hike was, it's actually one of the first alternate meetup formats that we discussed, and we never actually did it. And so it was cool to finally close the loop on that. Well, anyway, so we are here with the co-hosts of the Boston BitDevs. So we've got Stacy. Stacy, do you go by Stacy or Satsi? Which would you prefer?
I go by Satsi because it turns out there's a good number of Stacys in Bitcoin.
There you go. I think, and Rev just heard about one too. Yeah, there you go. So we got Satsi and Armin. And I'll turn it over to you guys. You guys can introduce yourselves and tell us a little bit about Boston BitDevs.
Great. Yeah, thanks for having us. As you mentioned, I'm Satsi. I've been involved with organizing Boston BitDevs since the fall of 2022. Now that does include a maternity leave, so I was gone for a little while, but it's been about 4 years. Armin is our lead host. I really just do the organizing. I help get us space. I help get us sponsors. And I just sit back and watch him lead the discussion. Over the years, we've had some rotating co-hosts, but Armin has just, he's really solid. And actually, him and I were attending Boston BitDevs in a previous pre-COVID iteration of it. So it's kind of awesome that disappeared and no one else wanted to bring it back, but we volunteered it. And to be fair, Zach from Foundation Devices is the one who actually said we should have this again. And here we are now.
Yeah, that 2019 meetup was actually the whole reason why I got into Bitcoin development. You know, I just showed up at this meetup. I think it was like May or June, and it was packed with all these amazing researchers and pioneers. And it's like if someone was just speaking a different language the whole time, I didn't understand anything. I just graduated from Boston University, and I was so confused how I can graduate with a computer science background and understand zero of what was just said in like 90 minutes. And from there, like the rabbit hole started. I started picking up Mastering Bitcoin, and eventually I got in contact with Stacy like years later, I think around 2021 or no, 2020, like during COVID. And I started working at Casa. So that's how we met. We met at BitDevs, and then eventually we started working together. And these days I work on Bitcoin privacy and open source, duly funded by MIT DCI and Spiral. Happy to take this discussion in whichever direction.
And if I may, I would love to give a shout out to our sponsors just because they are the ones that keep us going. For it has been so hard to find space. It's been so hard to find, like, I feel like you should feed the nerds because it's a lot to ask to say like, hey, come talk about really deep technical Bitcoin stuff. And like, maybe there will be dinner. But even before COVID and now, Fidelity Center for Applied Technology, they're based in Boston. They have just continued to host us again and again. They've been so gracious with their space. We've also been able to get space through MIT, both with the DCI where Armin works or the Bitcoin Club. And then throughout the years, some of our most solid food sponsors, number one, Blackstone Valley Cannabis. They just keep showing up time and time again. They have a Bitcoin treasury. The people there are not technical at all, but they just want to support the community in whatever way possible. And then we've had a host of other sponsors, including C Equals, Foundation Devices, Alpen, Timestamp, and Jolts. And just we are so appreciative because none of this would be possible if we didn't have the space and the resources.
That's awesome. Maybe we can just dive right into that because I actually wanted to ask you guys about that a little bit. So I have been to two Boston BitDevs. Both happen to be at Fidelity, but I know that you do have meetups in two locations, at least for now, which is Fidelity and MIT. And so, having MIT, which is, has a long storied history of, very technical people coming out of it. And I guess I'm very curious. I've always wanted to make it out to one of the ones at MIT because I guess from your perspective, like, does it draw a different crowd? Is it like a whole different kind of experience if you're having it at MIT versus there? Like, do a lot of students participate? Like you mentioned this Bitcoin Club. What can you tell us about that? Or like how interested are the college age students in all this stuff?
You would think that there would be like an entirely different crowd that shows up at MIT. And occasionally we'll get a few students and even some like postdocs or something have shown up in the past, but it's kind of our regulars that show up to MIT. And for the most part, if anyone new is coming, for some reason they show up to Fidelity, which has always confused me because I don't know, I feel like MIT is a little bit easier to get to. Maybe I'm just selfish because they live in around the area. But it's tough for students to get into it. Like it's a very intimidating is a strong word, but it takes a very special type of student to come to BitDevs, just be totally okay with being the least informed person and then come back. I actually feel like our conversion rate with students is pretty low. We can't really like capture that attention. And I think that's just like on us as organizers to curate the reading list and discussion a little bit more if we want to capture more students.
Yeah, and I think in terms of outreach, we work with the MIT Bitcoin Club year after year, but the fact of the matter is it is a student-run organization, so we normally work with the advisors who are not students, and they show up year after year, but every year the leadership there changes. They get a new president, they get like a new secretary and whatever. So it is kind of like reestablishing that relationship every single year, though it would be great to see some more students. So if there are any students listening, come on over. We want to talk to you. But aside from that, I think that something that's unique about Boston Bit Devs is I do feel like, and I haven't been to many Bit Devs across the world, but I've been to some, we have a higher percentage of cryptographers. And because of that, I think we spend more time on, this past year it's been post-quantum, but things of that nature is I think something that makes Boston Bit Devs unique.
You gonna tell them about the clock for the quantum discussions?
Yeah. So our Boston Bit Devs has a special rule. I don't know if any other Bit Devs has this rule, but we call it our quantum rule. Even if the word quantum is uttered, I start a 10-minute timer, and unless I heard something that I haven't heard before, I just cut the discussion off and I parking lot it, which means we can just talk about it over beers after. And the reason is, like, you know, we've been talking about post-quantum for years now, maybe since we've started. And for some reason, the discussion always just circulates around the same questions and talking points. Like, I remember talking about Hunter's BIP 360 before Ethan and other people joined on and before had a lot of attention. And the questions we got were, you know, when do I need to be worried about this? Like, why is there three different signature schemes? What are those kind of questions, but mostly like timeline questions. And then I had someone come on and talk about shrinks. This is like this post-quantum signing algorithm that Jonas and other people at Blockstream are working on. And it was still the same questions. It was like if someone presented just BIP 360 again, it was like, when do I need to move my coins? So, and like at some point, we just accumulated like an over like couple hours of talking about the same things. And I was getting eyes from our regulars being like, come on, man, like we gotta not talk about this anymore. So, you know, 10 minutes, if I hear something that I haven't heard before, it's kind of vibe based, then we keep it going.
So do you think I think it's very attractive to it's a problem that is theoretical in my opinion still, but it's still kind of a juicy one to solve because you don't know how this, if the quantum attack happens, it could start in so many different ways. And, you know, if it happened tomorrow, are we prepared? Probably not. But like, is it going to happen tomorrow? Probably not. And what I'm getting to here is like, you mentioned that there's like a high level of cryptographers. And so that it makes sense that this kind of polyculture, this group of individuals that all has this specific expertise, will continue to bubble up around some, one of these romantic and enticing problems to solve. And so I guess the question is, when it comes to like, When you redirect the conversation, do you like take that energy and push it towards another more like immediate romantic problem to solve?
Occasionally, yes. Like sometimes we reframe that question as more just algorithmic agility. And what I mean by that is like maybe the question's not, will a post-quantum quantum capable adversary break my keys? It's just, when will Bitcoin's cryptography break? And are we ready for that? It's very possible that classical computers may break EC before a quantum adversary. And it's still the same question. Are we ready for that? Does that change the discussion? If it does, maybe we let it continue. But otherwise, it's usually the same talking points. I guess like it's kind of disappointing too, like when I do have people come on and talk about the new sexy cryptography. I selfishly want to learn more about it. And the discussion always comes back to just, when should I be worried? What do we do with the vulnerable keys? The same things. So I guess we need to attract a little bit more of those cryptographers in town to come out to BitDevs.
So I guess to follow up on that, I do this thing here. I have like a 20-acre homestead here, and I got sheep and all kinds of animals and fruit trees, and I'm operating on this concept or framework of permaculture. And so one of the sayings in permaculture that we have is that the problem is the solution. And so I guess like there's like other romantic problems to solve, as I mentioned. And like maybe since there's so much cultural capital built around the knowledge of quantum, right? Sounds like the group is very well understands all the different potential avenues we could go down. You could talk about it for hours, and that's why, and you do it over and over again. So that's why you shut it down. And so it's like, I think that a lot of times these problems can get solved through exploring something else, which does, it's like a positive thing, a new thing that we can do with Bitcoin that simultaneously buttons up the quantum problem. And now it's like, you don't need to sell the fork or whatever needs to happen as, oh, this is just solving quantum. It's like, it's doing this cool thing that we want to do. And by the way, we also get this quantum, solution at the same time.
Yeah, that's interesting you bring that up. So like this is something I was thinking about, probably shouldn't be, but on vacation I was thinking a lot about this, of like how bad the post-quantum Bitcoin world is. And I was having some conversations with my colleagues as well about this, you know, like the post-quantum world just sucks for Bitcoin, unfortunately. Like signatures are larger, keys are larger. That means throughput sucks. If we go with like the hash-based signature schemes, we lose all the algebraic structure. That means we can't do things like Frost or MuSig or adapters or blinding signatures. Like all these things people have thought about for a while, we kind of lose all of that. And I was thinking about like, is there any wins here? And the one thing that kind of stuck out to me was aggregation. So Fabian has recently put out some work called CISA, cross-input signature aggregation, essentially like a mechanism for signatures of different inputs in a Bitcoin transaction to be aggregated to be one. And this is really nice because you get all these fee savings, and privacy protocols would use this thing. So it like incentivizes privacy protocols to be used. But then like it's really attractive also in the post-quantum setting, because like I mentioned, the keys are bigger, signatures are bigger. Like it's almost unavoidable to not have aggregation. So I think some people on Delving and the mailing lists were urging Fabian to think about the post-quantum version of this as well. Like what does it look like for post-quantum Bitcoin to either natively like block-wide aggregate signatures, or for certain off-chain protocols aggregate. But like that's one case here where like something that someone else was working on in the like EC world is maybe directly relevant to post-quantum discussions.
All right, how'd we do? Was that under the 10 limit, to the 10 minute limit for quantum discussion, or were we good?
I didn't start a timer, but if we just talked about what we talked about right now, I would let it continue, because like that's something we haven't talked about if it does.
There we go.
Well, there is one thing I want to add to this, and it's like it's related to the AI stuff that we're going through right now, right? So all of a sudden, all these open source projects were built and developed without the power of the AI being truly unleashed. And now that it's here, it's poking holes in everything. And that's the same thing that Bitcoin is built up before this quantum computer exists, and it's going to poke holes in it. But then as long as we survive, now we have a fucking quantum computer to build shit with, right? And so ultimately, as long as you survive through the quantum attack, sure, we might have to blow up the signature sizes and stuff just to survive. But once we're through, then I imagine there's probably tons of possibility to make things way more efficient after the fact.
Yeah, I feel like it's almost a little bit awkward to me that we're like quantum conversations are as attention grabbing when we are going through this kind of AI adversary. Like that's the immediate threat, is a people who have the ability to burn tokens faster than you, being able to find vulnerabilities in open source software. Like this far out quantum adversary is arguably much less of a priority than setting up pipelines for auditing your open source software, just making sure you're as capable as this adversaries that exist. So in some sense, I do think it is taking away attention from some more pressing things. But that's kind of like a controversial take.
And I mean, a lot has changed over the landscape in the past few years, from kind of no one thinking about it to now lots of people thinking True. About it. We got what, I don't know what it's called, the Bitcoin Security Council or something, trying to fund it. So I think like it went from something that seemed really obscure to now arguably, you know, we're spending so much time on it that we need that timer. But, you know, everything balances out in the end.
So I wanted to pivot a little bit here and talk about some of the other stuff that you guys have going on. So, Satsi, I think you had mentioned to me that you're doing some work with Bitcoin Dev Project. You want to just, I guess, tell us a little bit about what that is and what you do there and what Bitcoin Dev Project is kind of trying to help everybody, like what problems it's trying to solve.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So the Bitcoin Dev Project is a developer outreach initiative with 100% free and open source tools and education, not only for existing Bitcoin developers, but also for aspiring ones. And our goal is to really, well, one, support the current developer community. So we've got tools like TLDR, which is a mailing list summarizer, something called Bitcoin Transcripts, which is transcripts of Bitcoin technical talks, podcasts, and stuff like that. And like at face level, you're like, okay, that's cool. But what you unlock with that is you are now able to search through that kind of stuff. And this has been going on since, I want to say 2019 is when it really started. And it was, I know that Brian Bishop is famous for being able to type really fast, and he would go to Bitcoin conferences and meetups and type transcripts really fast. And for a point in time, we had individuals doing that as well. But on top of that, we built Bitcoin Search, which is a search engine that pulls exclusively from high quality technical Bitcoin sources. So delving the mailing list, our Bitcoin transcripts. Now, in the age of AI, that's changed. I think Bitcoin Search was launched in 2023, and that was a whole different landscape. We actually recently killed our ChatBTC because, unfortunately, ChatGPT has become good enough to replace it, but you know, such is life. So we've got tools for the existing developers out there, but also for the ones who are like Bitcoin curious, we have something called Decoding Bitcoin, which is just a series of self-paced lessons that you can go through to learn all the technical things that you want to know. We also have a game called Saving Satoshi to expose people to some of the more fun aspects. Like the first chapter has you going through the a block explorer and finding and decoding the secret message that Satoshi left for all of us. But the real name of the game is to make sure that we have a strong pipeline of talent coming into the Bitcoin developer community, because we have amazing devs, honestly, the highest quality open source devs there are out there. You want to argue without me, come fight me. But you know, they're not going to be around forever. They are going to retire at some point. And I think it's really important to the success of Bitcoin that we continue to have great people thinking about interesting problems, that are passionate about what Bitcoin stands for, and coming into the space and like trying to contribute to it. So our goal is to make sure people know that there are job opportunities, and following up with that to help level people up so that they can make that career leap and make Bitcoin open source software, or as we lovingly call BOSS, a full-time job.
So you said this is for existing Bitcoin developers, but also aspiring Bitcoin developers. So have you guys seen any kind of influx of aspiring open source developers who are really just vibe coders, or How has that been going? Yeah.
Oh yes. And I think for that, it's a double-edged sword because everyone is using LLMs now. Most, okay. I mean, there are still some holdouts who I respect very much who will not. But as we saw recently with the development of Red Team, you need to be auditing your code at the very least with an LLM. I never thought I'd live to see a day where my job has become obscure, but it's like crazy to me that we used to write code by hand and maintain hundreds of thousands of lines of code as a team by hand. But I think like at the end of the day, in like anyone can vibe code whatever they want. And so to really put out signal, it falls back on, you know, things like what this meetup is this podcast is talking about is like showing up in person, asking questions, meeting people. That human connection that you cannot replicate online is going to be really like increasingly more important. But the other thing too is even if you don't like show up to these things in person, if you just stick around and continue to engage and continue to be thoughtful and continue to build, I think eventually you will get to where you want to be.
I wasn't sure if you had something to follow up with Armin Reed on the.
Yeah, I've been getting a huge influx of people from either like, yeah, all these like different programs that get developers up and going. I mean, it's almost unavoidable to find someone who's not using AI in some sense. And in another sense, I would be disappointed if you weren't. Like if you had no tools in your tool belt, I'd be like, okay, what are you doing? The kind of thing that's concerning me is the lack of knowledge transfer between the person who's sitting in front of the LLM and the LLM itself. Like, is the person taking time to actually scrutinize what they wrote and understand the Bitcoin protocol? That sometimes is a little bit lacking with the recent influx of developers I've seen. Some people hit it out of the park. Like you can tell they have an engineering background. Maybe they came from something else. They've gone through a review process with their code. But if you are a new developer and you weren't used to writing code by hand, it's like that piece is still missing. That I understand what I just wrote and I can answer questions and I don't have to like reference the LLM the whole time. So that's a little bit concerning to me. I think like whatever like boot camps we're setting up for developers right now, like there needs to be some more attention towards like people actually understanding what they wrote.
Yeah, I think one of the most infuriating things is somebody opens up AI slop PR. Okay, whatever, fine, you can do that. But then you ask them questions about it and the responses are LLM generated. And it's like, if I wanted to talk to an LLM, I would go do that. And that's kind of where it gets a little disappointing because you are now putting human time into reviewing something that it looks like the other human author has not. And I've seen people banned right off the bat. And I have actually seen people who are not LLMs get banned for talking like LLMs and, you know, in some cases, they might just be a little too autistic online to have some humanness show through. And eventually it comes out and they get unbanned. But we're wild times right now.
Yeah, I mean, to some extent, like when you're working with a junior, you could just do that work yourself now. You can just offload it to an agent. You don't really need a junior. But the only reason you're working with juniors right now, and to some extent, like this whole Bitcoin dev project is to get the senior engineers in the future, right? We're like building people up. But like, it's super disappointing when people just respond back with LLM responses when you're trying to train them, trying to mentor them. Unfortunately, kind of like a reoccurring pattern.
Well, so going back to like meeting up in person, because that's really what we're all about here is like, what is the power when you actually get together at a Bitcoin meetup? What do you get out of that? And so sure, you can be a vibe coder and submit PRs from where your office or wherever you're vibe coding at. But then if you show up to the bit devs and you start to talk about it with other people who are involved, now you can get fast feedback, right? It's you can take that back. And you've also built social capital there, where now people are kind of, you know, you're fresh in their mind. You're showing that you're willing to spend your time going to meet everybody and hang out and build relationships. And so this is a way of building web of trust, you know, that we don't need to necessarily rely completely on some web of trust algorithm to filter out these waste of time PRs, basically. It's really, if it sounds like if people want to get involved, the best way to get their foot in the door is to meet everybody and show up.
Yeah, 100%. I talk to a lot of people throughout the day, and the people that stick out in my mind that are memorable are the ones that I have met in person or have asked interesting questions or have kind of like done something in person that like has made me been like, oh, like you are like legitimately interested in this. And like, even if they're wrong about something, or like, I've had people who I find to be very annoying online who I've met in person. I'm like, oh, you're actually a wonderful human being. And like, I really enjoy spending time with you. And I think that's kind of like a hack, and like how to propel yourself that much further is like, show up, like put in the time and effort. And it totally makes a difference. And I will say, this is not for everyone, but one of my favorite things to do in the world is volunteer at conferences. I think it's wonderful because you are helping and then you get to meet all the speakers, which is like the coolest thing in the world. And like for some conferences, BTC++, if you volunteer, you get to go to the speaker dinner, and it's just like a wonderful thing all around.
Yeah, that's a great idea. That's a great conference hack, especially if you're interested in the conference scene. Just raise your hand to volunteer. I guess I wanted to, before we start getting into a little bit more of a technical topic here, maybe just to round out this, some commentary here about the vibe coding. It immediately pops into my head the meme that it's like, you know, I'm a bit of a vibe coder myself. And, you know, like we all are, I suppose, these days. And, you know, I'm having fun making websites and doing Noster stuff and some stuff for Podcasting 2.0, but I think my lack of actual developer experience has always steered me away from anything touching the money. Like, I don't like vibe coding things that touch lightning, you know? Like, I'm too afraid. Like, because I can't verify, like, I don't look at the code, right? And it kind of makes me think, like, when I'm doing it, like, I've tried to use the vibe coding to, like, help me write. Like, oh, I'd like to write an article, like, for human consumption. And I read the stuff that this thing spits out, and I live with almost none of it. I like can't stand it. And I can only imagine, that's what I imagine, like a real coder reviewing my code, like behind the websites and stuff, going like, oh my God, this is just all slop. But I don't even know, because I don't know. Like, I don't know how to read the code, really. So I don't know. I guess, you know, in the world, when I said aspiring Bitcoin developers who are her vibe coding, I'm thinking of people like me who are like, okay, are you really an aspiring developer here, or are you just having fun with Claude or whatever?
I think in open source, it depends on the policy and the posture of like certain projects, but it's really about like how you carry yourself in your pull requests and your contributions. So like, are you making a 10,000 line change and your description is really heavily AI generated? And then like Stacey mentioned, all of our questions are being responded to by an LLM. At that point, I feel like it's almost disrespectful. So like, I've had interactions like that where I'm just like, okay, I'm not going to take you seriously in the future. And then certain projects just will auto close that. So Bitcoin Core, I'm not sure what their filter is, but they just close PRs. If you have not contributed before and there's like a slight clue that you might be using an LLM in your code, then they just close the PR. They don't have time to review all those PRs. But on the other hand, like there's a lot of success stories too. So we talked about libshrinks at our last meetup. Shrinks is this post-quantum. So this is one of our quantum discussions. The timer did turn on for this. And we did like covered in less than 10 minutes. But Shrinks is this post-quantum signature algorithm. It uses SHA-256. And recently there was a reference implementation all coded with, I think, Fable 5. At first they used like Codex or something, didn't work, then they used Fable 5. But they've gone through an extensive process of validating it using formal methods. So that's like really interesting, right? Now we got this like giant code base generated by a robot, but as a human, we're able to sit with certain guarantees about what it's actually doing. If you're more interested in that, there's like a really good delving post on this topic. I definitely recommend it.
So you're going to have to help me out here. Is that called fuzz testing? When you try and break the thing? What is fuzz testing? I hear this on Bitcoin OpTech all the time, and I never had the opportunity to actually ask anybody what that means.
Fuzzing is a little bit different than like providing formal verification. Fuzzing is taking, let's say you have a function, it takes some input, maybe a string. A fuzzer would just iterate extensively through inputs to that function, and you would always hope to get the expected result.
And fuzzing kind of throws really random, unexpected inputs, right?
Yeah.
And that's kind of why people talk about it so much, is because there's just like a lot of things you can throw out these functions. And then I'll also mention, though, that fuzzing is like a very common method of testing outside of Bitcoin as well.
Yeah, so but it's been very fruitful in Bitcoin specifically. So we found like consensus bugs in alternative implementations. So BTCD had some pretty nasty ones people found. And at this point, it's hard to go to any Bitcoin open source project that doesn't have fuzzing. It's kind of become like a standard because it's so good at finding bugs, right? Like Stacey mentioned, it just covers so much ground about the input space to certain functions. And it's not that hard to set up either. So very low setup time, very high output.
So this person that developed this this software with the AI, you said they're like testing it. So they're probably fuzzing it. Sounds like that's a thing you can do. But are they just basically using like the human, like how would I actually use this? I'm going to try and break it. And in order to know how to break it, you have to be very intimately, have an intimate understanding of how it should work in the first place, right? Sounds like that kind of example is like, yes, this is somebody who's vibe coding something, but they also understand they're trying to break it in ways that make a lot of sense. And so now we can cooperate here.
Yeah. And certainly like there is a multidisciplinary understanding here for developing that kind of cryptographic software. You need to understand cryptography. You need to understand Bitcoin. You need to understand whatever formal verification tools they were using, which is like not my area. But you can't expect a novice to do that, right? They're just missing so much domain knowledge. To your point, like, how do you know the output you're looking at is the expected output? And that's not just a problem with like cryptographic software. That's just the problem with software engineering in general. Like Stacey and I, when we were working at Casa, like we're handwriting code where we already know in our heads like what we are expecting, like what the architecture of the code looks like. And then we drive towards that. And then when we use LLM tools, like we still have that in our heads. Like we kind of know what the expected outcome is. And if the LLM is just like steering away from that, well, we just push it towards it. For a junior, that's a little bit tougher, right? Like they may have never written code without an LLM. So sometimes they like just get this output and they think it's good enough.
So I think we talked a little bit pre-show that on our last episode, we were able to do kind of a deep dive on Fediment. That was with Justin from Minneapolis BitDevs. And Rev and I, not just in preparation for this show, but just in like our past conversations, we're interested in Bitcoin privacy technology. Like we've had people on to talk about, some of the stuff, some of the other kind of privacy tools in Bitcoin. But one thing that we haven't had any kind of a chance to talk about is PayJoin. And I understand this is something that you guys have some great experience on. And so if we're going to pivot our conversation over to PayJoin, probably the best place to start is, you know, maybe one of you guys could just give a good overview of what it is and why the Bitcoin community and maybe like the Bitcoin meetup community should be interested in PayJoin.
I'm going to take this because Armin, after I give the simple explanation, is going to tell you everything else with regard to the detail. But PayJoin is basically batching on the input side. So instead of one person contributing inputs to a transaction, in a two-party scenario, the receiver is also contributing an input. And what this does is it breaks the common input ownership heuristic that was mentioned in the Satoshi white paper. Basically, Chainalysis makes this assumption that all the inputs belong to the sender, but in which case it's not true with PayJoin. Armin has spent much more time than I have on it, and he can also probably talk to you about some of the more interesting ways that it can be implemented.
Yeah, that was a really good, like, 2-minute elevator pitch for PayJoin.
I've practiced.
Sweet. I guess just like a little bit more exposition, like this common input ownership heuristic thing, like where is that even coming from? Like, why do we care about that? So, you know, most people are familiar with chain analysis. This is like the passive onlooker looking at blocks and transactions. They're trying to de-anonymize Bitcoin users. And one of the ways they de-anonymize Bitcoin users is by applying something called wallet clustering. And wallet clustering is just the grouping of outputs. So these could be unspent outputs or spent outputs to a common owner. And common input, like Stacey said, common input ownership heuristic just says if a transaction has multiple inputs, they likely belong to the same owner. So let's say we had a transaction that had, you know, three inputs. Alice is trying to pay Bob and she has a pretty hefty payment, so she needs to spend three inputs. Chain analysis would look at that transaction and say, those three inputs belong to Alice. We don't know who Alice is yet. Maybe you need to like listen to the P2P network or try to find some other metadata to like label her into the real world. But she has some pseudo identifier at this point. So PayJoin attempts to undermine this heuristic by inducing false positives. So like, what is the easiest way to undermine a heuristic that says all inputs belong to the same person? Get other people's inputs into your transaction, right? So what PayJoin does is a sender creates this transaction. It's a fully signed transaction and sends it to the receiver. Receiver adds its own inputs and then sends it back to the sender. And then the sender signs and it broadcasts. And chain analysis looks at this transaction, it applies the common input heuristic, but now it's not right anymore, right? You got inputs that belong to different people. But this only works if chain analysis is sufficiently fooled into believing that this transaction was unilaterally constructed, meaning it actually just came from Alice. And that's really where the pitfalls of PayJoin are, is that there is a lot of information that can kind of the artifacts of their collaboration. So perhaps there is like oddities in coin selection. Like what if the receiver's coin that they contributed to is just like unnecessary, right? Like you could have made the payment with just one input. Why would you select this other input? It's called the unnecessary input heuristic. Very fitting name. But there's other things too. It's like, what if my wallet is producing inputs or producing transactions that have a particular policy or quirk to them? So these are wallet fingerprints that exist in your previous spend or your next spends, right? So like, what if one output goes off to spend with a certain end sequence value in their inputs and the other one uses a different value? Well, the same wallet would never set that to two different values, right? That's just not a normal thing. So wallet fingerprints ended up being a huge issue for PayJoin in the current implementations and the future implementations. And let's say you go through the incredibly hard task of getting consistent wallet fingerprints. The job is still not done. There's a lot of information that is revealed in the amounts themselves, right? Like you're paying someone. Right, there's a certain kind of value analysis that you could do. Right, the receiver is kind of contributing an input, but then taking a certain amount with them as well. I have a blog on this, by the way, on the PayJoin.org website just look up wallet fingerprints and look at kind of go through this deep dive, and I break apart a few page joins. You know, the kind of takeaway here is that we are humans after all. Like, we are economic agents that use Bitcoin, and we have very sparse preferences with how we use our Bitcoin. And if you were to fix all of the software issues, like all the fingerprints, all the unnecessary inputs, you still can't really change how humans behave and the relationships they have. And all of this information is starting to show itself empirically to break protocols that PayJoin, that are attempting to have this kind of steganographic, covert deception mechanism. And so, like, as a wallet developer, like, you can't just expect to implement PayJoin into your wallet and, you know, tell your users you have privacy. I think that's a very risky thing to do. It's a lot more difficult than that. You need to not only produce consistent things, like all the things I just talked about. So, you know, PayJoin was really interesting to me because of like various different reasons. One was that it met the users where they're at, right? It wasn't a solution where you had to go use a different privacy wallet. Privacy could be imported into your wallet. And I think that's like a really still useful way to think about solving parts of the Bitcoin privacy problem. And it's done like a really good job of that. It's also done a good job of like meeting user demands. So like users were complaining about the practicality of sending payments. In the previous version zero of PayJoin, you needed to have a recipient who was online at the same time as you. That wasn't really practical. BIP77 fixes that. Now you can do asynchronous PayJoin. So this is a team that is listening to how users want to use their software. And that's super critical when it comes to anonymity software. Anonymity software is totally useless if you don't have people who use it. So from a philosophical perspective, like, they've done a really good job of like listening to their users. But unfortunately, the protocol itself has some like fundamental flaws. So yeah, I've been thinking about PayJoin for a while. I was working on a version 3 where, you know, we can plug some of these holes and have multiple parties create a batch transaction. And this has kind of spun off to be its own protocol. I can talk about that a lot, but I've said a lot about like PayJoin privacy. I'll just kind of let that simmer for a bit.
So I do want to back up a little bit, actually right to the beginning. So you mentioned you pre-sign a transaction and you send that transaction to somebody else to add their inputs to it and send it back to you. Now that mechanism does not take place and never gets mined. That's not a transaction that you broadcast. You need to do some coordination there in order to pass that information back and forth. And I think that's where this is the same issue that we have with coin joins, right? The coin join does the same thing, right? It creates a transaction that has many inputs, and you can't tell whose inputs there. It's the same idea, mm-hmm. But that coordinator, so to speak, is the challenge. It sounds like. And so I think the original version of PayJoin, right, was that you basically had to be online all the time. And so that led it to be BTC pay servers, basically, were the big facilitators of PayJoin. And that's where the wallet finger, it's very easy to tell that this wallet fingerprinting issue comes from. There's only a few things that can accomplish this. When you make it asynchronous, now you get a little bit more, it's a little bit harder to fingerprint everything, but you can still do it. My whole thing with the PayJoin stuff is like, the way I use Bitcoin right now is whenever I send a UTXO, if I'm ever having change, I put that change into a swap that goes right into Lightning, right? And so I never actually receive change back to myself. I consolidate all my change on Lightning. And so where PayJoin would really help is like, now you can't really, if that's going right to Lightning and the other person's change is going to Lightning, it gets really, it helps to really obfuscate things, even if there's wallet. It's just better, right? If I can collaboratively transact with somebody in addition to myself, and the change is always going to Lightning, to where it will never be consolidated back together again. That's a huge upgrade. It's just like, what what wallets can I use to even do this? You know, it's like Bull Bitcoin, I think, has PayJoin implemented. And that's a huge incentive to use PayJoin is the exchange withdrawals, because that's fee efficient as well. But yeah, I don't know what wallets I can even use to accomplish cooperating with somebody.
Yeah, going back to that first point, the coordination mechanism. So PayJoin achieves collaboration without any coordination, right? So we don't even need a middleman to register inputs and outputs with, and then there's just in BIP78, there's just the recipient and the sender. They send each other PSBTs, and then you don't need anyone in the middle. In BIP77, there's a store and forward server. It's a really dumb server that just sees opaque encrypted blobs, and the recipients reads from it and then writes from it again. So I agree that coordination is a bit of a hassle for various reasons in other privacy protocols. But that's like one thing that PayJoin doesn't have to deal with. And hopefully future iterations of CoinJoin protocols don't have to deal with that either. Like we are pretty certain we know how to build decentralized CoinJoin protocols that don't require coordinators. Like the engineering is the bigger bottleneck for building such protocols, not as much the research side of things. And to another thing you said that kind of stuck out with me was like, you know, the fingerprints come from people using only BTC Pay. That's actually better from a privacy perspective if everyone's using like a consistent wallet that has like just consistent fingerprints. The problem is when they diverge, right? So like, let's say I'm using BTC Pay and you're using Sparrow or something, and we're doing a pay join. We want the adversary to apply common input ownership heuristic, right? We don't want them not to apply. We want them to apply because they're going to get false positives, but your inputs have maybe they just use a different script type than mine, or maybe in a more contrived example is like I use low R grinding and you don't, right? So that's a wallet fingerprint that tells the adversary these are two different wallets actually doing this transaction. You should not apply common input ownership heuristic because you would get a false positive. Actually, that information itself can lead to a better version of common input ownership heuristic, one that uses this auxiliary information to do better clustering. So a lot of my work right now is like thinking about how to model this kind of newer flavor of common input ownership heuristic and clustering, one that uses this auxiliary information.
So I've never done a pay join. Right. It sounds like you had a little bit more experience with this than I do. It sounds like you've got like, I don't have quite as much knowledge about all this stuff, but how can we're talking to a lot of people who go to Bitcoin meetups, other Bitcoin meetup organizers, you know, is there anything that a community can do to like help work together? Like you're meeting all these people in person, there's some level of trust there. Like, are there ways that we can work together or communicate amongst ourselves to like organize so we can start using pay joins or am I thinking about this all wrong?
I think from a more fundamental level, I'm like really apprehensive about the kind of privacy model that PayJoin is attempting to achieve. So I think a better question is, or a better discussion point is like understanding some of the pitfalls that PayJoin has, and not just PayJoin, like other privacy protocols have. Like wallet fingerprints are not just limited to PayJoin, they're also a problem with CoinJoin protocols as well. And not just like privacy protocols, like they're just a problem. So like, I would love to see that more on other bit devs, reading lists. I would love to work with other people who are interested in, digging deeper into how this auxiliary information can be used to hurt privacy protocols. It's kind of underdiscovered and, definitely not talked about as much. So I guess it's less about like do more pay joins. That would be better than nothing. But I also fear that people walk away with the wrong idea, that they are achieving some level of privacy. And that could be really bad in the worst case. The worst case is someone who is doing, they need a private payment. They think they're doing a private payment, but they're actually not, because, you know, they went to BitDevs and they were told they're doing a private payment. And then there's some like real repercussions. So it's like, I think the discussion should be a little bit different.
Yeah. Just being honest about like the trade-offs and like you said, the pitfalls. I do think that, so if you spend enough time looking into Bitcoin privacy and privacy in general, I'm sure you've all experienced like a level of like fatigue or exhaustion where you're just like, oh my gosh, I can do everything right. And then if I make one little mistake, it's hosed. It's gone. My privacy, like I just ruined all of it. And something that's really helpful just for me in terms of spirit and morale is to see other people at least trying and like trying to make informed decisions. I think that's really helpful, is to just like lead by example. So if you are going to local meetups, you know, like let's try to do some privacy preserving technology like silent payments, or like talk about how you do pay for a PO box. And then to answer your question, Rev, I believe the other main implementer of PayJoin V2 is Cake Wallet. But it's basically, to my knowledge, Bull Bitcoin and Cake Wallet are the two big ones.
And so it sounds like actually that it's better for like to use this PayJoin technique. It's better if everyone that's doing the PayJoin is using the same wallet, because then the fingerprinting becomes not an issue, right? It's the same fingerprint because you're using the same wallet. So that's kind of an interesting thing where it creates, because another thing that we're trying to do with, or what we talk about with this podcast, is community. And so there's a lot of opportunities for communities to have their own stack, right? Their own stack of stuff on how they use Bitcoin. It just develops through talking to all these Bitcoin meetup organizers. There seems to be some overlap, especially, you know, Strike is in Chicago. A lot of people are using Strike. Over in Ohio, there's River. A lot of people are using that there, so on and so forth, right? And so if there can be many, instead of just Cake and Bull, you know, if there's many wallets and you can almost spin up your own community wallet for doing collaborative transactions with PayJoin, now you're just in you're in the anonymity set of your community, right? And that's still better than nothing. It seems like there's like you know, steps to take here.
You're totally right in that there's no tomorrow we wake up and we have Bitcoin privacy, right? There's steps to get there. But I want to push back on one thing that you said, which is like, it's better to just use the same wallet because you don't have fingerprints. I think that's a little bit of a dangerous way to think about it, because the fingerprints are certainly an issue, but those are like one kind of tip of the iceberg, so to speak. The other things that could be used to kind of apply the same partitioning technique that I'm talking about, you know, information that reveals to the adversary these are two different wallet owners collaborating, is just how you behave on the Bitcoin chain. Like perhaps your Bitcoin comes from a known exchange and mine comes from a different exchange. Maybe you're doing business during certain time zones consistently and I'm doing, you know, in a different time zone. Do you have a certain fee posture? Like maybe your fee rate source uses round amounts and mine uses like floating point amounts. And then the other like more concerning thing is, who are you doing business with? Like, are you doing business consistently with the same people? Chances are, like, I'm probably not spending my Bitcoin the same way you are. That's also information that could be used to do this kind of partitioning. But to your point of, like, is it better than nothing? I think I've kind of lost hope in this kind of covert technique that PayJoin is attempting to achieve, right? That this, like, try to confuse chain analysis into applying this heuristic. I'm starting to do more work on covert techniques. So you mentioned coin joins. These are protocols that attempt to remove the correspondence between input and output using multiple different output amounts. There's different ways to do the mapping between inputs and outputs. And you can construct these protocols with people that you trust to some level, but not necessarily trust to like reveal private information about you. So these days I'm working on a different protocol. It's called Fungi or Fungi for like fungibility. And it's actually a suite of protocols. Why is it a suite? Because it operates under different threat models. So like one of the threat models is exactly what you just mentioned. Like what if you have a bunch of people at a meetup and you all want to do a transaction independently? You all trust each other, maybe not with privacy, but we could do a collaborative batch and maybe we're all online. So let's do a collaborative batch. We broke this out into different threat models because like this is a much easier threat model than something like an adversarial Byzantine threat model where you're doing coin joins with strangers. And now, you know, maybe fund safety is not at risk, but they can attempt to harm other parts of your experience with the protocol, maybe liveness. So you need some kind of more complicated cryptographic machinery or consensus. So yeah, this is pretty early in its process. We have some docs over at github.com/fungi-protocol. So yeah, keep up with that work. It was initially supposed to be PayJoin V3, but the two projects kind of forked off and now we're working independently.
Final question on this. So Reed and I love Nostr, and we think Nostr is like a great coordination layer for a lot of stuff. And I think that the Mutiny Wallet guys were starting to play around with Nostr as a coordination layer for doing their splicing coin join kind of idea. I don't think that they got spooked off by the samurai thing. But I just feel like there's something there with Nostr where this can be a coordination opportunity for gaining access to better privacy protocols, right? Now that the coordination can, there's a lot of fun stuff you can do with the coordination with Nostr. I don't know if you guys have thought about Nostr at all when it comes to doing this kind of thing or what.
Yeah, I've thought about this a lot. So the problem with Nostr is the transport mechanism really doesn't achieve a lot of privacy. So like the big problem is like, if you want to send, like, let's say you want to do a big group batch with someone and we all create some kind of ephemeral shared secret between us and we use different relays. The problem is the metadata leakage. So like, how are you protecting your IP against these different relays? So I actually wrote a NIP about this. I wrote a NIP that, let's Nostr relays use OHTP. So OHTP is this like really simple proxy technique that lets you protect your network identity, mainly your IP address, from the relay itself. So you send your request to this relay, to this OHTP relay, and then it would forward it to the Nostr relay, which kind of acts as this, in like OHTP nomenclature, the gateway. And the relay itself can read the Nostr request. I didn't get a lot of positive feedback on that NIP. And to be fair, I didn't do a lot of politicking. My initial feedback from people were just like, we're already using like Tor for a lot of things, which is like really good feedback. But then some other people just said like, we can roll out our own version of this. We don't need to like conform to like IETF specs. So, okay, whatever. I kind of gave up on that. But if people solve some of the like metadata transport leakages, like maybe it can be useful. The nice thing Nostr has going for it is that the tooling is really easy to use. It's really easy to pick up. Like you can pick it up in an afternoon. Even better, your agent can just like whip up an app in no time. So that's awesome. But the other things is like, you know, it does use WebSockets and like JSON throughout the whole thing. So like the payloads are really chunky. I wish like if I were to like reinvent Nostr, like maybe we can rethink some of those things.
And we can't end this section of the conversation without mentioning Monster, which was a hackathon project in 2023 that Armin, myself, and another colleague, Ron, worked on, which was music over Nostr. So there's a lot of experience into thinking about this.
Another great coordination application, right? So, I guess at the risk of continuing this discussion, do you want to describe what that was? Like, how did it use Nostr specifically?
Armin wrote the Nostr part. That wasn't obvious. You go for it.
God, that was such a long time ago. It's kind of like a blur. I can't believe we actually won that thing. But okay, so the way it worked was you had all the... It was a Musig wallet that used Nostr as a coordination mechanism. So one of the signers kind of self-elected themselves as like leader, and then like kind of spun up, I forget exactly what the NIP is, but this like group chat mechanism. So it shared this like ephemeral secret with the other signers. And then this kind of assumes like they have already kind of gone through setup. So the setup was kind of skipped for sake of like demo, but they would come online, and then the coordinator says like, hey, we need to send a payment out. Let's go through the Musig protocols. And then they would just use the Nostr relay to send messages back and forth to each other. And it was kind of a sexy project at the time because Nostr was popping off. So this was like 2023, I think. And also Musig was kind of happening. So it was kind of a no-brainer. And, it took a lot of gluing random code to get this thing to work. And back in the day, that was impressive. Like, even if you just showed up and you like just took a bunch of people's things and like rewrote it and hacked on it, like that was really what it was about. And I just like did the judging at MIT Bitcoin Expo this year. And there's all these like super polished websites and projects that like lack that kind of human element gusto to it. Like, you gotta have to judge them on a separate criteria, whereas like back in the day you kind of knew someone like sweated over a keyboard for like two nights. You'd be like, yeah, they should totally win, like that deserves some kind of trophy.
Yeah, maybe there needs to be like the hacker version and then the people that use the AI competition, just to keep the old skills fresh. I mean, I think apprenticeships are super important. Ever so in not just development, but like in what I do with homesteading and everything. I think we're moving into a world where, yeah, the information is at your fingertips. Anyone can access how to do anything they want, but there's something when you get with a person you're taught and they're showing you their ways, and their philosophy around why they're doing what they're doing. This, I'm sure it's applicable in development. But in homesteading and in building and all that stuff, the craftsmanship stuff, it's important.
Yeah. I talked to a lot of educators, and over the last year and a half, we've just seen such a big influx in people sometimes leaning on LLMs too heavily. I mean, it's a tool and it can be used a good way and a bad way. But there has been ideas that have come up that's like, maybe we should have a track of people who say, I want to use an LLM to learn this stuff. And then a track of people who say, I don't want to. I want to do it on hard mode. And not quite sure where people have landed with that, but I think it is certainly going to feel like a bespoke thing to write your code by hand, or like, you know, like anything, like in homesteading or like in just making stuff by hand these days that you don't necessarily have to, but it's about the joy you get from learning and doing it.
And there's not a lot of opportunities for this kind of mentorship that you're mentioning, like systematized ways of mentoring people. Like PhDs are kind of the last remaining thing. That's why like Stacy's work is so important, because otherwise, like, how do you even know this is an option for your career? It's not an easy thing to get into. And once you're in it, it's also not very easy. So like reducing that barrier is huge for keeping open source Bitcoin development alive.
Now, we didn't really, I think this is a good segue into it. We can just kind of, I know we're trying to wrap it up, Reed, but Stacy, I have one of your zines.
You do? So, no way, yes, which one?
I have the PayJoin zine, of course.
Oh, no way. Oh, amazing. Yeah.
And so this is one way of, so I talk about cultural capital. Cultural capital is the intellectual and experiential capital of a group, like the collective understanding of things amongst a community. And like we've got, like I said, we've got the information at our fingertips, that it's all out there. But when you get something in your hands and you get to flip through it, there's a different experience with that, right? And so I don't know if you want to talk about the zines and how that, what your thought process is with making those, but I think that the zines are like an example of something that goes back into this apprenticeship model where now we get the information in a way that is, what is old is new again, you know?
Yeah. Oh man. Yeah. I really appreciate hearing that feedback because it is definitely like a passion project of mine. I have not written nearly as many by this point as I would have liked to. I wrote the first one in 2023. The topic was BIPs and it was inspired by a Boston BitDev session where we were talking about BIPs and then someone was like, I don't even know how these are made. And I'm like, you know, I don't know either. So I kind of went into it, that rabbit hole. And, The easiest ones for me to write are the ones that kind of just come very naturally, that just follow my line of questioning. And then also a great thing about them is I get to talk to the subject matter experts. So every single one I've written involves the person who's like, quote unquote, the expert on it, which has been really cool. Currently, I have topics. So I've got the BIPs one, Stratum V2, PayJoin, Silent Payments. And I am working on another one right now that I have been trying to wrap up for a long time. It's about a topic that not everyone supports. So that's really brave for me because I normally like to write about like non-controversial things, but I've been changed by BIP110 that altered my DNA. It's okay to have opinions. But yeah, it started just because I have a technical background and I don't know if other people do this, but I learn something, I come to a conclusion, and then my brain flushes all the information that it took to get to the conclusion. And I sound like an idiot when I try to convince anyone of my position. I'm just like, oh, I think this thing, because I looked into it and it seemed right at the time. And so this was kind of my way of recording that. But also, I do think that it's really important for us to make the technical topics in Bitcoin more accessible, going to the greater theme of, you know, Bitcoin's not inevitable. It may be the best money, but it's not inevitable. And it's on all of us to make sure that it succeeds. And I think there is no use in gatekeeping this kind of stuff. Yeah, you sound cool if you understand it, but like at the end of the day, like everything's more fun with friends. And then just going to the form factor, I love analog things. I love paper. I love the way it feels. And then lastly, the biggest challenge with the zines is if you hold one, that you may not realize it, but it is one sheet of paper front to back cut in half and folded. And that is really, really hard to get it concise. The hardest part actually of zine writing is talking to the experts, them saying a bunch of things and correcting me and me being like, I don't know how I'm going to fit this on this piece of paper. And then, but the reason why I do that is because, well, one, you don't need to be, you don't need to learn everything in your first go. It's very helpful to not learn everything in your first go. But also, I really like this idea of having a closed domain. I think a lot of us are like this. I have a lot of tabs open at any given time. And if I'm reading something and I don't open a tab to research a part of something I read that I don't understand, I feel like I'm cheating myself or something. And so when you're holding a zine, that's a piece of paper, you cannot click anything. You cannot deviate from the path, which to me is a feature, not a bug.
So what's the topic? You didn't tell me what the topic was that you're working on. Are we keeping it under wraps?
We're keeping it under wraps, but one of the co-authors of the BIP is on this call.
I see. Okay. We'll have to leave it at
that. And I only have one published BIP, so this should be pretty easy to figure out.
All right. Well, there you go. Everybody's got their homework assignment. You can go try to decode the secret message here and find out what the next zine is going to be about. Okay. Well, I think we're coming up on the end of this portion of the episode. So I think one thing we like to do now is just kind of make sure that we give you guys sort of a chance to, talk about either what your key takeaways from this conversation were, or if there's stuff that you wanted to bring up that you didn't have a chance to. We just kind of want to make sure we give you guys a chance here at the end to, you know, close us out and leave everybody with, you know, either how they can find you or, you know, whatever your kind of final message is here. I guess, Satsi, do you want to go first?
Yeah. I just want to say thank you to you guys. And I promise they did not pay me to say this, but I think it's really awesome that you guys are talking about communities, because community organization isn't really that sexy. And it's oftentimes like a thankless job, but it's so important for us to get face to face, because in being in Bitcoin, I have found so many people that share the same values that I do that I otherwise would have never interacted with. And it's just, it's really, it feels good to just be surrounded by people that care about the same things that I do. And we're all here for the same reason. We believe in censorship resistant freedom money that cannot be inflated away by a government. And I think that is so, so important. And it's crazy that we're to the point where like there's so many different areas of Bitcoin that you can focus on. But I think at the end of the day, like it is, it's about the people. Like why do we want a store of value? We want a store of value so we can like have a family and have like a homestead and have a good life. And that's what it's all about. So thank you for shining a spotlight on like the humans and the communities and the stories behind that. And you can find me at satsie.dev, S-A-T-S-I-E, on all social media platforms. And the Bitcoin Dev Project is bitcoindevs.xyz. Our handle is bitcoin_devs.
Awesome. Yeah, thanks. How about you, Armin?
Yeah, just want to echo that. Thank you. Appreciate you guys having me on and talking about BitDevs. Like, I don't think anyone has ever talked to me about my experience running BitDevs, and I've been doing this for like 4 years. So thanks, yeah, for just talking to me about it. And I realize I've kind of painted a grim picture of Bitcoin privacy. Like, you guys were so excited to talk about PageRoid, and I was just kind of like, well, I've worked on it for a while and I'm like not that excited about it anymore. But there's other things that are exciting, right? So I don't think we should give up. We should just understand the problems. We should create models. We should formalize these things. And we should like actually understand why the transactions we think are private are actually private. It doesn't mean we give up, and it's not going to be an easy battle for Bitcoin privacy for various reasons. There's so many barriers to working on it, but yeah, it just doesn't mean we stop. So, catch me on X, Armin S. Dev, and my website's arminsivori.com for cool things that I'm working on in the near term future. Thanks.
How about you, Rev? You got any key takeaways?
Yeah, I think, you know, what I'm catching from this conversation is that, you know, there needs to be more devs, right? We need more people getting involved in this. And if you're interested in getting involved, like, sure, you can be in your office and you can be working on this stuff with your newfound power with the AI compute stuff. But if you figure something out, you should go to your local bit devs. You should go to the people that are also working on this stuff and start to jam it out in person. And maybe, once again, I think this apprenticeship model, this mentorship model is important in the days of all this information is accessible to anyone. You can go find somebody who's going to give you their individual experience, you know, or an aggregate of a community that has their experience. It sounds like Boston BitDevs has a lot of experience there with all this cryptographic, knowledge. And so then you can start to learn about how you can really do something. And that's what we need is we need people doing stuff because we're at the frontier here. You know, this is not easy. We're figuring it out as we're going. And, you know, if we do manage to get it all figured out, it seems like we got a lot of opportunity there. So go to your local big devs.
And maybe I'll just close this out by saying, Armin, I think to the point that you just made, feeling like maybe you're pouring cold water on, you know, excitement about privacy, you know, preserving techniques or technologies that might exist in Bitcoin. But I think the reality is we live in a world today where trying to find privacy is something that's kind of hard. And it needs to be done with a lot of care and attention, because the last thing you want is to think that you have privacy, but you don't, you know? And so if you're finding yourself in a situation where you're feeling like privacy is paramount, well, it's paramount that you have done your research, you know, ahead of time. And so that's what I mean. We were excited to hear more about PayJoin because we knew it was like we had gaps in our knowledge. And so it's like I always kind of felt like this is a tool that I'm not really comfortable using yet because I don't really know enough about it to like figure out how to even integrate it into anything that I'm doing. And so, yeah, I mean, I think it's just important to learn all this stuff. And, you know, what better place to learn it than to go to your local, bit devs. That's why we like, you know, I'm not going to lie, you know, some of this stuff is a little bit over my head, as are probably for a lot of Bitcoiners. But, you know, putting yourself out there and trying to spend a little bit of time with this stuff, I think is a very healthy thing to do for kind of any Bitcoiner. And also, you know, thank you guys again, right, for coming on. So I really appreciate you guys taking the time. And, you know, I've only been to a couple of Boston Bit Devs, but you guys have always been extremely gracious hosts. So thank you so much for all the stuff that you guys do for Bitcoin. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having us. This was fun.
Yeah, thank you. And hope to see you again.
Hell yeah. All right. Well, so we mentioned pre-show. So our show is kind of split in half, where the first half, we spend a lot of time talking with our guests. And the second half, we spend talking to our community. And so we have a lot of people that interact with our podcast from people all over. And so we have a whole bunch of boosts. I think Rev counted up. I think we've got like 30 boosts to read this episode. And we do a lot of other value for value stuff. We have leaderboards and games that we play on our website. So we're going to dive into all that. And you guys are absolutely free to stay on. We'd love to jam with you. If you want to have comments or maybe you know some of the people, you can chime in. More than happy to have you guys stick around. But yeah, we're gonna switch it up here and I'm going to move to our leaderboards. All right. Okay. So our first leaderboard. So we like to keep track of all the sats that have been sent to all our different episodes. And so we have a leaderboard for our top episodes and we do top episodes recorded by how many sats they've received because, I don't know, sats are the signal. And they're the signal of what? You know, this is what we say kind of every episode now. But so why do we even have this top episode leaderboard to begin with? Well, we're on episode 27 now. And so, you know, we think these are 27 very valuable episodes that you can go back and listen to. And many people have. We actually have had a lot of people go back and listen to a lot of our past episodes. But if you're like me and maybe you don't have the time, well, maybe you should start with these top episodes because apparently these are the ones that people have gotten a lot of value from. So number one overall, of course, is episode 15 with BTC Russell. And that one, Privacy is Sovereignty with BTC Russell from Columbia, South Carolina. And that episode has brought in a total of 2,382,590 sats. One of the big reasons, of course, why that episode brought in so much is because that was essentially our fundraiser for the Samurai developers. It got started with BTC Russell was going to donate his split to the Samurai developers. And then Rev and I kicked in our splits. And so all 2.38 million of those sats are going to the Samurai developers. So thanks everybody who's participated with our show and participating with episode 15. That will probably be our number one episode forever. So,
and moving forward, if you want to, you know, interact with the show and you want to send some sats in the Samurai Devs way, you can boost that episode and all the sats that are going there. We just take a 1% split, right? To recognize the boost and we'll read your message. So you can add, you can promote your product, you can promote your meetup, you can promote whatever you want to promote. And at the same time, donate to the Samurai Devs. So keep boosting that episode, everyone. It's not dead. It's there waiting.
And I'm going to return to that. Because I have something else to say, but let's move on to number two on our top episode leaderboard, which is all the way back at episode two. Episode two was with GC and James from Jersey City, and it was Meetups Are the Ultimate Web of Trust, and always been one of our popular episodes. And episode two has brought in 154,364 sats. And I know we have some of our listeners who it's their favorite one, and I think we're going to get to that later on. Third on the list is episode 20. This is with the guys from the Chicago Bitcoin Collective. So John, Foyce, and Brady. That episode is up to 151,843 sats. Fourth on the top episode is episode 14 with SourceNode. And that episode was Permaculture for Bitcoin Culture with SourceNode from Greenville, South Carolina. That episode's up to 113,719 sats. And finally, on our list of top episodes is episode 9 with Sir Spencer Wolf of Kansas City with is over 100K now, 101,684 sats. That episode continues to have some listeners and people boosting in sats on episode 9. So thank you guys. I know a lot of people have gotten a lot of good content out of that episode, and it is titled Growing Slow, Build Strong Communities with KC Bitcoiners. All right, and that rounds out our first leaderboard of our top episodes. All right, so our second leaderboard, we talked about last week, making a change to our second leaderboard. So this is our core group. These are our ride or dies. These are the people, the listeners who have boosted the most number of episodes all time. So last episode we talked about, we used to only read off the top three, and we've expanded that to the top five. But of course, that includes ties. So if we got five people tied for first, then I'm going to read off all five, and then I'll read out second place after that. Well, we do have a whole bunch of ties. And so we went from a three-person list to a, was that like an eight-person list I think we got here? So I'm going to start reading off some people here, but we got a tie for first between Perminerd and Noster Gang, both with perfect 26 episodes boosted. Second place is Admin Pac-Man, 25 episodes, so just one off. Then we're into 21 episodes boosted, so a two-way tie for third between Witsixer and Matthew D. So there you go. We didn't even have to change anything. Matthew D is back on the leaderboard here. And then we got Bullish Clips at 16 episodes, Shadrack with 13, and Battersea Bitcoiners with 13. So there you go. So that's technically our top five if you include ties. So we ended up getting a whole bunch of extras in there. And yeah, we love to read off these top boosters from our community. So thank you all for the support.
Who was with Matthew D in that tier?
Witsixer, third place.
Witsixer? Okay. So I think, well, Matthew D is worth mentioning because a lot of these people, because they're boosting every episode, they're going to come up in the boosts. But I don't think Matthew D has come up. So I want to just mention that Matthew D has been on the show. You can listen to the episode with Matthew D. I don't know what episode that number is. It's the Michigan Megalopolis.
I think it was 21. Didn't he get episode 21?
Oh, Matthew D got episode 21. All right. And Matthew D has White Street Paper or White Paper Street Soap Company. So check out that. I loaded up a bunch of soap at Lake Satoshi from him. Still burning through those bars, Matthew D. Thanks a lot, man. So yeah, I just wanted to make sure to shout out the folks that aren't going to come up in the boost. But everyone else, I think, is coming up.
And I can just say before we move on to our last one, so I'm going to get to it here, I guess, throughout our V for V section, but I have made some changes to the website. And you might, if you head over to our stats page, so localbitcoiners.com/stats, you'll see I've provided a small tool that might help for all the people out there who have been trying to figure out, oh, geez, I want to get onto this leaderboard, but I can't figure out which episode I'm missing. So now there's a section where if you sign in with Noster, it will go and check which episodes you have boosted and which ones you have not boosted. And so you get a nice little wall of tiles and they nice and clearly light up if you've boosted them. And they'll say there's a nice boost button on it if you haven't. So you can go and check out that on our stats page. All right. So our last leaderboard. So here's the one. This is kind of the big shakeup here with the leaderboards. And so for those of you who listen to the show, of course, we read off the biggest boosts that we've ever received to the show. Well, when we kicked that off, I think it wildly exceeded our expectations about how quickly things kind of ratcheted up. And maybe that was like a time where we had a strong amount of demand to be on our top episode or our top boosters leaderboard. But since then, it's gotten a little bit stale, not going to lie. And so we've had some other huge boosts come in, especially in the last month or so. And so we thought what we'd start doing instead is we always are going to recognize our top boost of all time. And I'll do that right now. So this was from admin Pacman via localbitcoiners.com, right from our website, with 2.1 million sats that were donated to the Samurai developers. So of course they boosted episode 15 and their messages for the devs, code is speech, at admin Pacman, paxarcade.org. Your Bitcoin time starts now. So we'll always be shouting out admin Pacman, and also we'll always be shouting out Privacy is Sovereignty, episode 15. And again, all those sats are going to the Samurai developers. So the change up here is that after we read off that top note, instead what we're going to do is read off the five biggest boosts of the last 33 days. And so there's some numerology there. 33 is a big number in the podcasting 2.0 space. We don't have to get too deep into the weeds, but why pick 30 days, right? I could pick 30 days, but why pick 30 when I could pick 33? It's like if you're into the Bitcoin numerology, why would you pick 20? You just do one more, just pick 21. Now you get a meme. So that's what we're going to do. So we've got the five biggest boosts of the last 33 days. And so that's what we're going to read off. So first on the list is 50,000 sats via Fountain from wartime. The message is, there's a regional Bitcoin meetup on November 6th through 8th at the Drury Inn in Grand Rapids. We got 101-91429. This is the code for discounted rooms. The code doesn't work on the app, but it works online. The Drury Inn serves breakfast and dinner. They also give you 3 free alcohol drinks with dinner. So Friday we'll have dinner and drinks. Saturday breakfast and dinner with drinks. Sunday breakfast. We'll figure out lunch on Saturday depending on how many people show up. The event is family friendly, so bring your family and let's get a ton of Bitcoiners to hang out and network. Be there. And that was a boost that came in on episode 26, Local Bitcoiners Fediment Socratic Seminar with Justin from Minneapolis. All right. Well, thank you, Wartime. That was a great rundown of that event. You got anything to add to that one, Rev? That's kind of right in your neck of the woods, right?
Well, we're gonna hear that boost again because it was on the most recent episode. So
this is true. This is
Hang
true.
Out. If you we'll want more information on that event, it's coming up.
All right. All right. So second biggest boost of the last 33 days is 48,000 sats via Fountain. And this is from Uncle Jim. And he just says, in quotes, you know what I mean? Question mark. And then signed Shinobi. And so I think this was in reference to, I didn't really notice it. Maybe I should listen back after we got this boost, but it sounded like maybe Shinobi said, you know what I mean? Like several times during the episode. So, but anyway, thank you, Uncle Jim, for the huge boost. And of course, that was on Shinobi's episode, BitDevs Are Bitcoin Meetups with Shinobi from Chicago, Illinois. Next up, we've got 21,317 sats via Boost Me Bitch. This one doesn't have a name on it or a message, but it was boosted episode 22, Getting Lucky with Meetups with Jacob from Indianapolis, Indiana.
Wow, that's a big boost. It's coming from, I don't know when that came up. I mean, it must have came up. And it's interesting doing this new format. I'm like, man, that boost came out of nowhere.
Well, that one's, it says July 31st. So that was like almost a month ago.
So yeah, that was I must have breezed past it because that was when you were on vacation. We were on vacation.
Oh, we had a million boosts. That's true. It could have just gotten lost in the shuffle there.
Well, yeah, great. Great to have that resurfaced. Thank you very much for that big boost there. Yeah.
Next up was 16,000 sats via localbitcoiners.com from Wartime Psychopath. And this is Wartime shared his meetup. So we're going to get to that actually during the next section as well. But he posted his meetup for Grand Rapids. And that's that same event that we just read off. Was that him too? Oh, that was also Wartime or two Wartimes. This is Wartime Psychopath. Do you know Rev? Is that the same person?
Yeah, it's the same guy.
Same guy.
Two N pubs.
Two N pubs. Got it.
Yeah. That's the beautiful thing about Nostr. You can have many identities.
That's right.
You can boost all kinds of stuff.
All right. Well, thank you again, Wartime. You're on here twice. And that was 1, 2, 3, 4. Oh, so we got one more. So one more. We got, this is 6,969 sats, 6969 via localbitcoiners.com from Sir Spencer, Wolf of Kansas City. And his message was, great to meet you in real life at Lake Satoshi, Rev. Reed, we will surely meet up before too long. If you can't make it to Nakamotown, we'll be in Massachusetts for Thanksgiving. Speaking of, Nakamotown is right around the corner. October 2nd through 4th, come and camp and sing and swish, and swim and fish and eat good food at Augie's Farm. It's going to be awesome. And then there's a link to the Nakamotown event. So this is another one of our featured meetups, which will come up during the next section.
Yep, we'll talk about Nakamotown more.
So that's the end of our formal leaderboards. I did want to give a couple shout outs here to the streamers. And this is a chance for me also to say we added another feature to our website. Again, if you go to localbitcoiners.com/stats, you can check out our streamer section. And now you can filter by some time periods here. So like I can do a filter on 1 week and see who streamed us for the last week. So Rev, we've got streamers. We've got Eric PP was streaming us stats from two apps, CurioCaster and Podcast Guru. Chad F streamed us 27 sats via Castomatic. Stacy Nova streamed us sats from Fountain, Pleb to Polymath, and then Chad F again from 100 sats from Boost Me Bitch. So thank you to our streamers. And we can also see who zapped in the last 7 days. And sure, we got a bunch of little ones, but Clay Seal boosted us 1,021 sats. So thank you, Clay Seal.
Yeah, I had the opportunity to hang out with Clay at actually the last Chicago BitDevs.
Oh, and, awesome.
Yeah, and Clay got some of that barn miner jerky, you know. It was great to, you know, make that connection in real life. It was good to meet you, Clay, and hang out for a while. So thanks for the zap.
All right, so next, it's become sort of an extension of our leaderboards. And I'm not sure if we're going to keep doing it as part of this show. We Rev and I have had several conversations about what the best place for this to live is. But obviously, for right now, it's going to live right here. And so, of course, for those of you who listen all the time, I'm talking about our 21,000 sat giveaway. And so this is to anyone who has gone over to our community feeds section of the page and featured their meetup on our events tab. So you can post your meetup on Noster. But, you know, we have a lot of people posting a lot of events, and we're not sure which ones are really the ones that we need to be focused on. And so we rely on you guys for that. So you can come to our website, and really what you're doing is if you're featuring an event, you're sending our podcast a boost with the event details in it. And if you've done that, it shows up on our website as a featured event. And so this week, Rev, we have a record, I think, here. I think people, the 21K sat giveaway is finally, people are starting to register that it's very easy to win 21,000 sats.
Right, so, as soon as we're right about out of money.
I know, we're going to have to revisit
We're running low on sats, guys, but you know, we're going to keep giving away 21K as long as we can. And we got one this week for sure.
So we are up to, I think I got, is it 7? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. I got 8 meetups to read off here. So I'm going to run down the list real quick just so we give you guys your shout out for your meetups. And then we're going to spin the wheel and find out who has won the 21,000 sats. So first up, we got, this would be tomorrow, which let's see, this episode's probably coming out tomorrow. So later today, Wednesday, September 2nd at 6:30 p.m., Cincinnati Bitcoin, how silent payments make Bitcoin more private. We've got an address here, 315 East 15th Street in Covington, Kentucky. So that was posted by Clay Seal and featured by me. All right, next up, we've got Jordy is got the Free Cities Conference 2026 Prospera. So that's in Prospera, and that's coming up Thursday, September 3rd through Sunday, September 6th. And that was featured by Mr. Rev Hoddle. All right, but now we got some new ones. So Battersea Bitcoiners. Battersea Bitcoiners is actually on here twice. So they promoted their September meetup, Thursday, September 10th, and Little Bianca in the UK. And Battersea Bitcoiners, again, has their October meetup here, Thursday, October 15th, 6:30 p.m., also Lil Bianca in the UK.
Guaranteed two meetups over there. That's proof of life, you know, that meetup's happening.
And made the event full disclosure for you here, Battersea Bitcoiners, I only entered you into the pool once. So, sorry. I don't know. We haven't had someone feature two meetups before, so that's what we're going to do. WitSixer, he boosted the Cleveland Bitcoin meetup, which is coming up Friday, September 11th at 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. at Saucy Brewworks, Cleveland, Ohio. Another new one, Chicago Bitcoin Collective. So they featured their V4V Chicago 2026. I guess it's a meetup or a little conference or V4V summit. I've heard it could have been called lots of different things, but that would be Monday, September 14th and Tuesday, September 15th at Fork and Coin and at the Chicago Bitcoin Collective in Chicago. Then we've got Nakamotown First Annual Retreat. This would be Friday, October 2nd through Sunday, October 4th in Ray County, Missouri. That was posted by Augie and featured by Spencer. And finally, we've got, again, we get another read-off here from Wartime Psychopath. This would be the Grand Rapids Jury Inn Meetup Weekend, Friday, November 6th through Sunday, November 8th in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Okay, so I am going to, I guess, get the audio over here. All right, Wheel of Names, here we go. And looks like we got Jordy. Has Jordy won before, Rev?
Jordy's a two-time winner as well. We got two-time winner. Yeah, great.
There we go.
Jordy's posting a lot of meetups beyond what the Prospera one is. He's really exemplifying, you know, getting those meetups out on Noster. And that's why, you know, I featured his event because Jordy is out there.
He's doing a lot. Yeah. They got a big Satlantis product launch, I think, coming out this week, too.
What does Jordy win?
21,000
sats.
Oh, that was a 21K give out. Nice. Congrats, Jordy.
It pays to be a meetup organizer.
Yeah, and participate with the show. That's what we're trying to do. We ended up, we rolled out just for you guys, I guess, since thank you for hanging on with us so far. But we've been rolling out all these kind of games and stuff for the community to try to get more involved with the podcast. And we love reading out, you know, what people have going on. And we're trying to like promote Bitcoin meetups here. And so we rolled out this feature on the website to feature events and like kind of no one was using it. And so we're like, all right, here we go. We'll give you a reason to use it. And so now I think people are starting to get it. And so that means it might be time for the subsidy here to get slowly taken back.
Is the subsidy, it's coming from the boosts you guys get?
Yeah.
Okay. So it's a little bit of a model going on. Okay.
Absolutely.
Going. So yeah, okay, like one third of the sats when Reed and I are just talking together, or one third of the sats that come through the website that are not associated with any particular show.
Or the zaps.
Those
100% yeah, of the zaps.
100% of the zaps go to this fund that we, you know, push back out to
we call it our V4V fund.
Yeah, get the value for value flowing, get the value chain reacting here. And you know, the whole goal of getting the meetups on Noster is that if the meetups are on Noster, then it's very easy for every meetup to have their own website or have their own client or have whatever they have. And then you can have a map there of all of the other meetups in that network, all of the other places in the community, because Noster is, you don't have to ask anyone, hey, like for example, so Relatively Irrelevant from Indianapolis, he's doing a great job building up this meetup tool on the Indianapolis meetup website of like the meetups in Michigan and meetups around. And he keeps coming into the Telegram chats and stuff and saying like, give me the information for your meetups. Give me the information. Is it on meetup.com? Where do I go? How do I get it all? Is this legit? And it's like, if it's on Noster, then he doesn't have to do anything. He just sets parameters and filters for what he wants. And so that's the idea, is get the meetups on Noster. So that way, we can aggregate this information very easily everywhere.
That's really great. We have a BitDevs chat. I'm gonna tell them about this. But yeah, it's also a great way to see like the micropayments, the Lightning micropayments that we get on Noster, like actually being like finding a use case. That's awesome.
Hell yeah. Yeah, we're trying to find a lot of use cases for all this stuff.
And you guys, you get a third of the split. So you're going to see on your wallets, you know, when people are streaming, you're going to get these little payments. It's cool. It's super fun. It's not a ton of sats, but it's just like, hey, this is feedback. I mean, Shinobi so we had Shinobi just kick off this BitDevs segment, this series that we've got. And so he got a split. And then when I go to the next BitDevs, Shinobi's like, oh, I have enough sats from the splits from the show that I can buy eggs from you.
Oh, and, wow.
And so it's not a lot, but it's enough to like move the sats around in a circular fashion, you know?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's the coolest thing. We moved off of Meetup because they were charging us and we didn't want to pay it. We now use Evento, which is developed by Bitcoiners, and there's native Lightning support in that. And for one of our meetups, we actually airdropped to like 21 sats to anyone that actually RSVP'd and showed up. So I think that's really great. Like being able to spend your sats with people you know is like really fulfilling.
It's just great ways to get the Bitcoin moving, you know, and create incentives for participation, cooperation. I mean, I didn't get into it when in the actual episode, but like I think cooperation is that's what is enabled when you meet in person. Like you can really level up the cooperation.
Yeah, I'm continually searching for that one thing that forces people to use Bitcoin such that they don't care they are using a different type of currency. And I think you're onto something.
To like a larger point, like cooperation was one of the main reasons I wanted to start Bitcoin, BitDevs back up in Boston. Like I wanted to create an environment where we can get people who are already talking online to just do the same thing in person. Like specifically, I was really frustrated about certain things just taking as long as they were. And unfortunately, like a lot of them haven't progressed as fast. This is just Bitcoin. It's the nature of things. But it progresses a lot faster when people can just talk in a room and disagree and have discussions and ask questions. So I 100% agree with that.
All right, Erev, what do you think? Transition to the boosts?
Let's do some boosts. Like we said, we got about 30 boosts to read off tonight. That's amazing. That's the value chain reacting. That's the cultural capital propagating. Every time you send in a boost to the podcast, it goes out to Noster. And so this information lives on there and it gets regurgitated through all these other mechanisms that we have to keep this content alive. So when you post a boost, it comes back. And the first boost we have is 420 sats via localbitcoiners.com from admin Pacman. Great episode. BitDevs are Bitcoin meetups with Shinobi, Chicago, Illinois, episode 25. Well, we all know the story with admin Pacman. He's the biggest booster of all time to the show. So thank you very much, admin Pacman. He's at the top of the leaderboards. Biggest supporter we got. Appreciate the boost. Next, we got 100 sats via Fountain from Bullish Clips. And Bullish Clips says bullish. And that was on Michigan Meetup Roundtable with Buffalo, Grand Rapids, Michigan, episode 23. And so Buffalo is the one organizing that regional meetup there at the Drury Inn. We'll talk about that more coming up. Next, we got 2,237 sats via Fountain. Is that a meme number? I wonder if that's a Fountain.
I'm not sure.
Thing there. 2,237 via Fountain from God's Death. He says, thank you, gentlemen. Fediment Socratic Seminar with Justin, Minneapolis, Minnesota, episode 26. Thanks, God's Death. You're up there. Next, we got 3,400 sats via localbitcoiners.com, 5,000 sats intended. We got one leg failed on that one. And that's from WitSixer. Fediment was something I looked into for years, but I found it difficult to understand. I decided I needed smart people like Justin and you guys to explain it, dumb it down for us simpletons. Maybe in time, I'll gain more traction as education surrounding it increases. And that was on Fediment Socratic Seminar with Justin from Minneapolis, episode 26. And so, yeah, with Sixer, I think this Fedimint stuff, it's got uses, but there are huge trade-offs to it. And you really do have to be considerate when spinning up one of these mints, choosing your guardians. And you really have to have, you're either going to be playing a game with it to test it out and doing small stakes, or you got to have a real good plan for what the heck this thing is going to be used for. Because it's not really anything to, you're either doing it small and playing, or you're doing the real deal. It's there's a lot of responsibility, it sounds like, when you do one of these Fedimints. Reed, did you have anything to add to the Fedimint thing?
Yeah, I mean, I think that was a really good episode, just to like educate people about how to like what aspects of it you should be taking very seriously. And so, yeah, I mean, I definitely appreciate the boost. And, you know, I can't remember. I think we talked about this, Rev, but, you know, with Sixer, man, he's got some good boosts. You know, he's always sparking conversation and getting stuff going and asking questions or making points. And so, you know, thanks again, with Sixer. We really appreciate you, you know, playing along with us. And we like that you're, you know, getting into Nosser and enjoying the show. So definitely thanks again for all the big boosts here.
Yeah, a boost that sparks up some discussion on the show or even on Noster, you know, asking a question and getting some responses there. You can see that. That's a high quality right there. And we got Wit Sixer up again. 1,000 sats via localbitcoiners.com. A few things stood out to me in this episode. I'll comment on one of them. The idea of going slow and not very fast is true. A previous job I used to have required me working with transformers and electrical grid. I'd tell my guys, fast is slow, slow is fast. You get into a rush and you're more likely to screw up. Just take your time and do it right the first time. This 100% applies to anything Bitcoin related, especially setting up self-custody. And that was Evolution and Development of a Meetup, Niagara, Canada, episode 10 with Sean. And yeah, at Small and Slow Solutions, you know, like this is kind of and there's like a successional nature to Bitcoin because of the because it is a complex system. It's we talked about it a little bit earlier in the episode. You when you're testing these wallets and things, you can kind of put in an input and have an expected output. But a complex system, when you put in an input, you cannot ever predict the output. That's what makes it a complex system. And so the only way to interact with complex systems is to slowly, you know, walk your way around it, observe it, and really interact with it to the point where you feel comfortable making decisions. So yeah, fast is slow, slow is fast. Just take it easy and work your way through this stuff. I think we learned big lessons in that in this recent cold card hack and all of the stuff that's going on with these AI things, you know. All this new stuff, you don't need to go all in. You just play with it and build your understanding and then utilize it. Utilize those techniques to the best of your ability. Did you have anything to add, Reed?
No, just appreciate Red Sixer going back. And that was back from episode 10. So going back and hitting the backlog. Appreciate it.
All right, next we got 101 sats via Fountain from Noster Gang. Not sure which episode I missed. Only boost got me at 25 episodes, but local Bitcoiners got me at 24. Questioning emoji. And that was on Fedimint Socratic Seminar with Justin, Minneapolis, Minnesota, episode 26. And I guess we got that sorted out, Noster Gang, because you're right there.
Sorted out.
You've boosted every single episode. We appreciate it. Next up, we got 333 sats via Boost Me Bitch, Chad F, 33 others. Hashtag 40HPW, Fedimint Socratic Seminar, Justin, Minneapolis, episode 26. Well, thanks, Chad F. And I guess that's his proof of 40HPW for the Noster Gang 40HPW challenge on onlyboosts.social. You can check that
Let's
out.
Go.
I've been playing the Noster Gang 40HPW challenge. Last week I hit it. I boosted 40 hours of podcasts in 1 week. And so
I'm going to try it this week. I'm going to try to send a boost to every podcast I listen to. And I've never done that before. So if I do that, I'll see what my total is for the week. I've never added it up before.
How hard is it to listen to 40 hours of podcasts a week?
Well, I do
have 7 days. You have 7 days and you've got 2x, right? So it's not actually insane, but it's a lot of podcasts.
I go for
20 hours in 7 days.
I go for a walk every day at lunch. And so it's like an hour walk. Every day at lunch, I go for an hour walk. And so at 2x, there's 2 hours right there. And then I listen while I work out. I got time for podcasts.
Has there never been any pushback on the 2x part? Is it really 40 hours? I guess.
Oh no, no. 2x is fine. In this culture community, there's a lot of 2x.
Well, I mean,
out there.
Really, you could just do a boost print on localbitcoiners.com, right? And just go, you're a new community member and you want to get on the leaderboard. You can just go boost 20 episodes and all of a sudden you've got 40 HPW
right there. It's all for fun.
It's not necessary. There's no rules here. It's about creating incentives to increase the velocity of this interaction, because when there's exchange of information and experience, that's how you build culture. And if the velocity of that increases, then we're going to build culture more effectively. That's what the 40 HPW is about.
Yeah, no, I truly love that. But someone out there is listening to 41 HPW.
Let's go.
Oh, there's charts on onlyboost.social that'll show you how close you got and just didn't get there.
Oh, wow.
Yes. For you guys, I guess since you guys are new, so onlyboost.social is my side project. That's my contribution to the Noster and Bitcoin or podcasting 2.0 space. So there you go.
I love the name.
Yeah, let's go.
That's great.
All right. Next up, we got 111 sats via fountain from Bullish Clips. Bullish. And that was on the Fetiman episode 26. Next, we got 111 sats via fountain from Bullish Clips. And they say bullish. And that was
also
on Meetups of the Ultimate Web of Trust, episode 2 with New Jersey. Next, we got 333 sats via Castomatic from Chad F. Mints are something I've looked into for podcasting 2.0 as a way for people to offer liquidity for listeners, but we're not there yet. Need to be an easier way for people to send a few thousand sats to podcasters and musicians. Hashtag candor. And that was in the Fenny Mint Socratic Seminar with Justin, Minneapolis, episode 26. I think that the eCash stuff is, it's going to happen. It's just someone needs to do it first. I think this custodian
thing. Well, it needs to be done the right way. There's a lot of trade-offs. You got to nail it.
Once again, like Reed was saying too, when you're doing development, vibe coding development around money and stuff, this is like we can't be playing. This is a different kind of game we're playing now. This is serious. And when you're doing these custodial eCash mints, it's a little bit more serious, and you have to you got to have a good reason to do it. So tricky chicken and egg kind of thing.
Is there like a standard mint people are using these days? Like, this is an area I just don't keep up with anymore. But like, I know that one of the huge issues is like, how do you pick your mint? So there's all these like projects that were like reputational systems on mints. But like, I don't know. Has anyone figured that out?
Well, I think what Chad F is saying is that he'd spin up his own mint for his, community. And that way, this is kind of like one of the problems that we're having with splits. Keysend is an easy way to do splits, but not a lot of wallets support Keysend. And so now you've got these LNURL ways to do splits, and it's a lot more cumbersome. And so like Fountain, for example, will take, you pay one Lightning invoice, and on your behalf, they pay the splits, right? So they're like a custodian for a short period of time. And this is eCash kind of enables this functionality where you can present one QR code that now, once you pay that, this Prism payment happens through the eCash to make the splits. But it's just, now you're the custodian of that Bitcoin for a certain period of time. People have to trust you, and it's not totally peer-to-peer. And there's like all these kind of purity tests, kind of trade-offs, and the risk too of the technically, are you the custodian, right?
Yeah,
nobody wants
to be
a money transmitter.
This going back to like Fedimint, like distributing that risk is kind of the next natural step, right? It's like maybe you can, for your community, find a couple other people that are willing to take that risk with you. like we thought about it for a total of 2 minutes at Boston MidDevs. At one point, we were thinking about setting up a Fediment thing for at least our treasury, and then maybe people can use it in our community. It just never really took off.
Well, like we were saying before, it's good. You got to do this stuff very intentionally. You know, like you got to really make sure you understand not just what you're doing technically, but like how it's going to be used. And, you know, you have to have, like we were learning from Justin, it's kind of important. Like it's kind of either like you're doing this just to play around to see if you can get it to work, or if you're going to actually start having people send real money like into your mint, you now have like a pretty big responsibility to keep this mint up like for a long time, like at least until everybody gets their sats back out of it. So that can be a big responsibility. And so it's just good to be very intentional about it.
Yeah, this is the Oregon Trail, you know, like not the video game, the real thing where you you can die easily and you make a big mistake and that's it. So it's we're on the frontier here. Next, we got 333 sats via Boost Me Bitch from Chad F. This would make it a great lit show, L-I-T. What does that mean? I know Reed knows how now. So what is lit, Reed?
Yeah, so this is, we were learning this. So Chad and Reed's podcast, my other podcast. So we are live streaming now. And so like we'll release our episodes. We record them live and, you know, and then we'll release the recording afterwards. But lit is a podcasting term and it's live item tag. So L-I-T. So when you, that's what they say. If you're going live, that means you're lit.
So Chad F. wanted this episode live, and that was Fediment Socratic Seminar with Justin, episode 26 from Minneapolis. So maybe if it was lit, then we could get some questions and add to the Socratic seminar.
Absolutely.
All right. Yeah. Good feedback, Chad F. Maybe now that Reed knows how to do it, we might start doing some stuff live. And next up, we got 333 sats from Boost Me Bitch from Chad F. again, and he says, helipad! Exclamations.
Because I actually used it last episode.
Okay. So, yeah. And we used helipad to figure out some numerology. All right. So there you go. Helipad, check it out. It's a great resource, a great app that you can use if you're doing this value for value podcast boosting stuff. Next, we got 333 sats from Chad F. again. If you're not giving your guest a split of the boost, you should be. And guess what? The guests tonight are getting a split, 1/3 split. All the boosts. Shinobi got a split. Shinobi bought eggs with his split. The split is real. If you're doing a podcast, give your guests a split. Doesn't hurt. Everyone loves getting those notifications, no matter how small on their phone. Ping. Another boost came in. Next, we got 1,000 sats via localbitcoiners.com from Reed. And you're boosting an episode. You must be trying something out. I don't know.
This was a test of some kind. Okay. Usually I do 100 sats for my test. Maybe I fat fingered it and gave 1,000.
Oh, man. Wow. Straight into the value for value budget. Those sats are going right back out. Next, we got 420 sats via localbitcoiners.com from Reed again. And this time you've linked an article. So you must have been testing, promoting some articles or something.
Oh, you know what this is? Now I'm remembering. So another thing I added to the website that we didn't get a chance to talk about yet. So we have featured events. And we had talked about before that we had featured articles. So if you do a long form article, if you're in our community, it'll show up on our page. But, you know, how do we find the best long form articles? Which ones are really important for our community? Like if you think, hey, people in local Bitcoiners community, this is really for you. Well, you can feature it on our website. And so now you can feature, we have 4 feeds. So we have, let's see, events, long form notes. We have podcasts and marketplace. And so now you can feature stuff on all 4. And so that's what that other test boost was, the 1,000 sats. I was boosting, I was featuring a podcast. And so that's what this link is here. This is to the, I featured the Open Markets podcast episode that you and I were on.
All right, great. Yeah. So there you go. If there's super high signal stuff that you see and it's on our website, something that's on your radar, you can feature it and let everyone else know. this website should be a way to get some high signal information. You know, it's not just a place to come boost the podcast. It's a place to go learn what the community has to offer as far as what they've been looking at. Next, we got 210 sats via Fountain from Perma-Nerd. These dev episodes are way above my pay grade and I'm loving every minute. Hashtag yada. And that's the Fedi Mint Socratic Seminar with Justin from Minneapolis, episode 26. And that's good. You know, good to push your boundaries there, Perma-Nerd. Hopefully you get away with some valuable information. Clearly you're boosting, you're getting value out of it. So appreciate it, man. Next, we got 100 sats via Boost Me Bitch. And that's it. Someone just boosted the show. And then we got another one, 100 sats via Boost Me Bitch. And Boost Me Bitch is Chad F's. You can do music on their podcast. It's a very easy way to boost and interact and see live stream content. Check out Boost Me Bitch if you haven't. It's cool. Next, we got 420 sats via localbitcoiners.com. And this is from Battersea Bitcoiners, and that's boosting their meetup. Battersea Bitcoiners, September 2026. September 10th, 6:30 p.m. to 9:30 p.m. And that's in Little Bianca, London. Get out to that meetup. And we got another one from Battersea Bitcoiners, 420 sats. And that's another meetup, October 15th to 6:30 p.m. to 9:30 p.m. Once again, Little Bianca, London, UK. So you got back-to-back meetups there. You know Battersea Bitcoiners is going to be out there hanging out if you show up. Next, we got 286 sats via localbitcoiners.com, 420 intended, one leg failed, and that's from Battersea Bitcoiners again. Justin was a fantastic guest. Loved hearing more about Fedi Mint. P.S. The Battersea Bitcoiners anniversary sats market in August featured sats oil from Sicily, good beans from El Salvador, jam and spreads, jimble jumble from U.K., plus other global Bitcoin goods. Thanks to local Bitcoiners for putting the idea in my head to source global products. Everyone had a great time. All the best and keep up the good work. Ollie. And that was on Fedi Mint Socratic Seminar with Justin, episode 26 from Minneapolis. Man, Battersea Bitcoiners, that's super cool. You were able to aggregate all those products. Bitcoin all the way down. That's like a global circular economy happening right there.
Love to hear it. Thanks, Battersea Bitcoiners.
All right, next up, we got 100 sats via Fountain from Pyrohawk. I think it would be fine to include any and every event or product or article you want to promote in the sats giveaway. Kind of like saying, these are all things we value and we want to reward. That gives value to the community knowing where to focus on some attention and gives incentives to create to keep building in different ways because we might get rewarded. And that was on Fedi Mint Socratic Seminar with Justin, Minneapolis, episode 26. And so that's
so
good
we've got
feedback.
The ability now. We've got the ability because now, so now I've got, you can feature anything on any of the feeds. And so, yeah, I'm totally down. We can add some names to the wheel.
Yeah. And so like if we're going to maintain the 21K sat threshold, that kind of does require interaction with the website to get that third split out into that wallet where people, it's kind of like the 50-50 raffle that Bowl After Bowl does, you know, where they're like, all right, here's the 50-50 raffle. You got to put in to get out kind of. I don't know. We'll see if we can keep the wheel going. It might have to go down to less than 21K. But if we can, I would love to sustain 21K. I mean, this is all about as much interaction as we get. That's how the 21K happens, you know. All we got to do is get 21K sats worth of interaction every week. And that wheel can happen. Next, we got 1,000 sats via Fountain from Nova. Me too, Reb. Cheers. Pushing through with allergy issues. Salute emoji, cheers emoji, fist up emoji. And that was on Fedi Mint Socratic Seminar with Justin, Minneapolis, episode 26. And thank you, Stacy. I'm finally getting my allergies under control. I will have my magic allergy tea recipe up on Conduit Market when I finally put that stuff in the tea bag in the shipping
awesome.
State. Yeah. This allergy tea, guys, is like magic stuff. It's totally
so,
wild forage.
And if we haven't made it clear before, right? So if Rev's going to be posting this on Conduit, which is a Nostr client, they'll also show up on our website. And so there'll be, of course, Rev's in our community, obviously. And so as a community member, you know, he'll be, all his products will be listed for sale on our website as well.
That's right. If you have any products out there on any of the NIP99 marketplaces, and you're a community member, it will show up on our website and people can buy it from you. And so that's where you find this web of trust, this proof of reputation. You're a participant in local Bitcoiners. If you're a participant in local Bitcoiners, you got something for sale, it's probably something pretty good. People aren't
going to
get screwed over.
And just a reminder, how do you join the community? Send us one boost. One boost from your NPub, or be a guest on the show. So Satsi, Armin, you guys are in the community now. I've looked up your NPubs. You'll be in the community. So if you put something for sale on Nostr, it will be on our webpage. So there you go.
Sell some zines. Who knows? Maybe someone will buy one.
Let's go.
Nice.
Next, we got 50,000 sats via Fountain. That's the big boost from wartime. And that's promoting the regional meetup November 6th through 8th at Drury Inn in Grand Rapids. There's a discount code. You'll have to check out the boost. I won't read it all over again. But this regional meetups, yeah, it's not worth reiterating. The real point here is that this is a place anyone in Michigan, and if you're going to travel in, now you can just get to this hotel. You got lodging right there. The food is going to be provided by the hotel. We're going to do like something for lunch and we're going to figure it out. It's going to be a fun little experiment in what it's like to do a regional meetup at a hotel. So join us. I will be there for sure. I'll be there. A lot of the Michigan crew is going to be there. If you want to hang out with us, come join us. And the next we got is 16,000 sats from wartime. And so wartime actually said that of that 50,000 sats, one of the legs failed, but since he boosted from Fountain, it was refunded to him. And,
I was wondering about that.
It didn't show up in our bot. Just looked, it looked at a 50, the Fountain paid the node 50K sats, sure. But then yep. It refunded wartime back 16K for the failed leg. And so that must have probably meant that Justin.
Yeah, I followed up with Justin. You probably heard a bunch of these episode 26 ones with failed legs. And I followed up with Justin. I think we've replaced his Lightning address with one that should be working a little bit better now. So hopefully not still an issue going into the future.
So Justin, if you want that 16K that we owe you, we'll send it your way. We'll figure out how to get that to happen. But then wartime from that next 16K sat boost was just featuring the meetup on the website. Next, we got 420 sats via localbitcoiners.com from a local Bitcoiner. And this is a meetup, or it's an article. Let's see what the article is.
I'm seeing it's looking like it's coming in wrong. This is a featured NIP99. Oh,
so this is Augie's raw milk. So Augie is trying to break our stuff. Thanks, Augie, for testing that out. It didn't work. It's a shopster.store listing for his raw milk. I guess if you are in the Kansas City area, you can buy raw milk from Augie.
Well, it worked. It worked on the community feeds page, but the boost page is not. This isn't how it's supposed to look. So we'll work on it. Thanks, Augie.
Yeah, thanks. We owe you a zap for testing our features and breaking it.
Let's go.
Next, we got 1,000 sats via Fountain from Clay Seal. I don't know much about Fedimint, but I know more than I did before this episode. Good job, guys. And while I'm here, I'll take my free ad space to plug Cincinnati Bitcoiner September meetups. Wednesday, September 2nd, we'll be learning about silent payments. And Thursday, September 17th, we'll have our social at a local brewery. Check out our meetup.com for details. And that was on Fedimint Socratic Seminar with Justin, Minneapolis, Minnesota, episode 26. Well, thanks, Clay. It was good to meet you once again, and hope you enjoyed that jerky. Next, we got 1,000 sats via localbitcoiners.com from WitSixer. I really like how Portland has multiple meetups per month and how each one is tailored to a specific aspect of Bitcoin. From Bitcoiners to BitDevs, social, and even annual conferences. Really impressive. Something we should all strive for as our meetups grow. And that was attendee to organizer to conference host, Portland, Oregon, episode 11. That was, man, look, that episode hasn't come up in a long time with Sixer.
Yeah, resurrecting some of the old episodes. I love it.
And that was a really good trajectory of you know, when you're in a big city and you got a lot going on, how you can really take it to the next level fast. Good episode to reference if you're building a meetup in a city and you want to see what the potential is. Go check out that Portland, Oregon episode. Episode, what was it, 11? Yeah, episode 11.
Yep.
Next, we got 1,386 sats via localbitcoiners.com. 2,100 sats intended, one leg failed. And that's from Chicago Bitcoin Collective. And they're posting the V4V Chicago 2026 Summit Conference Meetup. We don't know what exactly it is. It's cool.
It's going to be a great event.
Yeah, it's just, we don't know. It's just show up and check it out. It's Monday, September 14th, 2 p.m. To Tuesday, September 15th, 5 p.m. And that's at Fork and Coin in the Chicago Bitcoin Collective. And so what they're having going on there is, Reed and I are going to be speaking. There's going to be a lot of, you know, value for value content, ideas around value for value. That's pretty much the idea there with the presentations. And then there's going to be a bodega with a bunch of products for sale. I'm going to have my traditional homestead goods, just like any old meetup. There for sale and a couple Bitcoin miner space heaters. And then there's going to be a value for value concert with Stardust headlining. And they got a shuttle going over to the venue and everything. It's going to be a great event. If there's like a handful of tickets left is what John was saying. Is like there's a few tickets left, but there will be a live stream as well. If you can't get tickets or you can't attend, you want to see the content, it's going to be out there. Definitely worth paying attention to. And next, we got 333 sats via localbitcoiners.com from Chicago Bitcoin Collective. And this is promoting the event again. So definitely check it out. Next, we got 333 sats via Fountain from Wartime. And they just have a dynamite emoji. And that's on Michigan Meetup Roundtable with Buffalo, Grand Rapids, Michigan. And so, you know, Wartime is definitely hot on it with the regional meetup there. Buffalo is the one organizing that regional meetup at the Drury Inn. And he went back and listened to that episode. And finally, one more boost, 333 sats via Fountain from Shadrack, Pure Signal, hashtag 40HPW. And that was on Parallel Systems for Silent Bitcoiners with Bittish, Cleveland, Ohio. And I will actually add to this. So Bittish and I and several of the Michigan Bitcoiners are working on the first route, the first trade route, where a fella is going to go from Michigan down to Nakamo Town. They're going to pick up goods all the way and deliver goods all the way. And they're going to head from Nakamo Town back up through Cleveland into Michigan. And they're going to distribute and pick up goods all the way. And we're going to be, you know, playing this game, right? Of how can we create our own shipping service via the meetup system and create more market access for products and services. Well, mostly services is kind of hard. Okay, products that, you know, Bitcoiners from local Bitcoin meetups have to offer to other Bitcoiners at other Bitcoin meetups.
All right. Well, that closes out the boosts. Thanks, everybody. That was a lot of boosts to read off. We always appreciate the support. And Satsy, Armin, you guys hung out with us the whole time. Yeah.
You made it.
Thank you.
It was fascinating. There is so much going on in Nosterland, and every time I think I've logged back in, you guys draw me back. You guys are so passionate about this, and I love hearing about all of the products, like the natural incentives there are to just like. I always think of Bitcoin like as it's supposed to like complement your life. It's not supposed to be your personality, and so like for people to like make actual goods and services. And then Bitcoin becomes a medium of exchange for that is wonderful. And I think that's what we should be working towards. I got to figure out something I can make, and maybe we can have a little circular economy going on in Massachusetts.
Well, I want to add to that a little bit with the zines is actually how we're going to do in the future. Our big dream for this is to do localized marketplaces based on events. But in addition to that, having a physical catalog with QR codes of all the people. So when you go on this route, you hand out the catalog.
Oh, fun. Yeah.
And then people that like are at the meetup, they don't know what's going on. They're not tapped into Nost or anything, but they get the physical thing. And then they can scan the QR code and they can find the marketplace that now you're clued in. This is something I can buy on this route that somebody's going to be taking.
I love that. That's so great. I'm a big like Made in America maximalist, and this takes it like one step further because it's like made by a Bitcoiner, probably in America, but it doesn't matter at that point. It's just made by a Bitcoiner.
A local Bitcoiner. There you go.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think we're ready to wrap up here. So again, thanks so much for coming on the episode. We loved hearing about Boston Bit Devs and about all the cool stuff that you guys have going on. And thanks again for hanging out all the way to the end.
Do you have the next meetup lined up? Do you have info for that?
We do. Go to bostonbitdevs.org. So next month, or next one we're having for sure is November 5th at Fidelity. We may or may not do one in between that, but I know that September and especially October are pretty busy months for everyone. But
there
if you,
go.
Want
you
it,
got time to plan
us.
All the way
Let's
out
go.
In November. Hell yeah.
Yeah. And we're also looking for more people to help co-organize. Mm-hmm. Like if you want to help lead the discussion all the way to like finding sponsors and some of the logistical things. Like if you're in the area, reach out, please.
You guys got a group chat people can find? I guess sometimes putting the group chat out there publicly, but if you're in the know, right, there's probably a group chat that you can get into, right?
There's a pretty public Boston Bitcoiners Telegram channel that I don't even know how you find something in Telegram if you just search for it.
Yeah,
I think it's better that you can't find it. I feel like if you need to go to, if you want to find the group chat, you gotta show up.
Yeah,
come to the meetup, and then you can get into the group chat.
That's a really good
go to the meetup.
Come to the meetup,
get involved, help these guys out. Bit devs are important. We got anything else, Reed?
I got nothing else.
Thanks,
guys. Roll the outro.
It's awesome.
Episode complete. If you run a Bitcoin meetup and want to talk about it here, reach out. Check the show notes for contact info, link to meetup organizer resources on GitHub, and more. Send us a boost of any size and advertise your next meetup. We'll read it out on the next episode. And remember, attend your local meetup or start your own. Local Bitcoiners are always just one meetup away.